There are these moments you have when you connect in a way, spiritually, emotionally, musically, and you take a breath, you think a thought, you sing the song, you finish the song, and you take a breath, and you don't really know what happened. It just something just happened.
The power of the music of the night.
That's internationally renowned Broadway performer and concert singer Doug LeBrecq, who with Christiane Knoll and Debbie Gravitt will appear with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra Saturday night in a show called The Music of Andrew Lloyd Webber, Marvin Hamlisch, and Friends. Mr. LeBrecq is my guest tonight on WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. Glad you could come along tonight.
Help me make the music of the
It's really a thrill that you'll be with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra this Saturday night with a program of the best of Broadway, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Marvin Hamlisch, the whole gamut.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be back here.
Since this is our first time talking to each other, and it seems like it should have happened earlier, but I would love it if you could maybe give us the short version of your musical life as a young person growing up in Michigan, in Battle Creek, and where you went from there.
Oh, okay. Well, I was born and raised in Battle Creek and went to Battle Creek Lakeview, and got involved with singing, I would say maybe a little bit later than most people, maybe not until eighth grade. I actually went to a private Catholic school, and I learned that if you went to public school, you could take these. I thought you had all these choices, which I thought was amazing, because you just went to school, Catholic school, you just do what they tell you. And I thought, if I went to this public school, you can choose music, you can take woodshop. There are all these selections, you know. And I begged my parents to go, and my father and mother headed out over this, and my dad said, if he gets into drugs, you're gonna haul him out of jail. He was really opposed to me going. So, and the truth be told, you couldn't really make any choices except you could choose between home ec or woodshop and choir and I don't know what other class. But anyway, I did choose choir, and it kind of was a turning point for me to discover that I could, you know, carry a tune and hold pitch, and my voice hadn't changed yet, so it was almost like a boy soprano tessitura. But then from there, I got involved in high school choir, and there's a group called Spartan Airs at Lakeview that I was involved with and sort of caught the bug. I was always never a show-off, per se. I was always very reluctant to sing. I wasn't one who would sing a solo, and I just couldn't wait to get up there. I actually was debilitated by the nervousness. So I went on to did a couple musicals in high school, was in the chorus of South Pacific, and did the lead in Pippin. And I just sort of noticed at a young age that when I did that, people paid attention in a different way. And so it kind of taught me to maybe keep doing that more. And when you're a teenager, you know, you're very impressionable. And so I took voice lessons and ended up at University of Michigan. Actually, I went to University of Utah initially. I was a springboard diver. I was a high school All-American springboard diver. Who knew? But I got a full ride to University of Utah. So I initially went there and stayed for a couple of years, and then ended up transferring back to Michigan right when the musical theater department was being formed. Graduated from there, had a wonderful voice teacher there named Leslie Gwynn, and took singing pretty seriously and never really chose the classical route, but I always trained my voice classically, which has really served me in the long haul. And then I just sort of climbed a little ladder of, you know, did a chorus at the Barn Theater one summer, and then I got in a tour where I was a tap dancer, got my professional equity card, left college for 6 months, did a production of Sugar Babies, and then moved to New York and got in Les Mis in the chorus. After I was in New York, maybe about 6 months, but I had done opera, Dayton Opera and Michigan Opera, did productions of Candide. And then I got into Les Mis, which was wonderful, and I was very young, and I was in the chorus and played the part of Montparnasse, and then I got in another company and did Jolie, and I understudied Marius and did Marius about 50 times.
My voice is ringing, and I can hear them now.
And then the way of the theater world, the casting people cross over between shows. So I tried to do a good job and got a little notice as a young guy, and was the part of Marius was a good role for me. And so they brought me into audition for Cats. They thought I could do Rum Tum Tugger or one of the Cats because I was a dancer as a younger person. Not an extraordinary dancer, but good enough to do, you know, something like Rum Tum Tugger and Cats. And I got hired a lot as a dancer when I was younger because I was a diver. I was very flexible and coordinated. So anyway, I got an offer to audition for Cats, and the casting people, you know, they said, you can do this if you want. You can do it. It was a bus and truck tour of Rum Tum Tugger. You can do it, but you really should go in for Phantom, and Hal should meet you. And so I went in for Phantom Toronto for Raoul, and I got it. And so that was really a sort of a turning point for me. I went up to Toronto and learned the role for about 3 months. And then I went out on the national tour as Raoul. Did that for about a year and a half, maybe. I'm not sure what the timing is. And then they were auditioning for the Broadway revival of Showboat. They had been auditioning for it for about 3 years. And there was nothing in it for me. And everyone in the cast of every show had been in for this. And they said, Hal wants to see you for Showboat. And I said, there's nothing in Showboat for me, but I'll go in. I mean, who's not going to audition for Hal Prince? So I went in, and people had done 10, 12, 15 callbacks, literally years. Garth Derbinski was the producer up in Canada. And I went in and sang a Kurt Vile piece from Love Life, that very rare, never recorded show. It was sort of a heroic, almost like the soliloquy in Carousel. This is the life for me. And Hal was like really impressed that I chose it as my audition song. And I did one reading for Ravenel. I read one scene, not even the youthful Ravenel, but the old Ravenel, because throughout Showboat, it covers decades. So he starts as a young man, probably mid-20s, and he ends up as a 60-year-old graying hair guy. So I read the scene, and then that was it, and I left, and I got it.
Wow.
So I never had a callback. I did about maybe a minute and a half audition. I sang and he cut me off. He's a great choice of a song. Read this, handed me the sides. And I went out and I looked at the sides. I came in and he said, terrific. And then, so that was a big turning point to make my Broadway debut in a Hal Prince original cast, which had really been a dream of mine. If I had written something down in college, if I was setting a goal, that would have been the top of my list. To be in the original cast of a Hal Prince directed musical would be the highest you could go. So I felt very fortunate and very grateful. And it was an all-star cast, and it got a lot of national attention. And Elaine Stritch was in it. Robert Morse was in it. Rebecca Luker was in it. Lonette McKee was in it. I played opposite Lonette McKee. And it was a big hit. We tried out in Toronto, and it was a, people were picketing because they thought it was a racist show. Misinformed people shouting loud and saying it enough, trying to convince people that it actually, the whole point of Showboat is quite the opposite. But it was a pivotal role. I got a build part, and it was, you know, it was nice, but it was, I was the understudy to Ravenel, which was essentially why I was hired. And so I did the show forever. I did it. We tried out in Toronto for a year, and then we signed year-long contracts for Broadway, and then we extended. And then we got in our, you know, 33rd month, and I just said, I gotta move on. So I moved on. Then they gave me the part of Ravenel on Broadway. They gave it to me for about 3 months. And then I got the part of Ravenel in the Chicago company. And then I went in for Phantom, to play the role of Phantom.
Oh, you turn from me to glance behind the Phantom of the
Opera. That audition was not a minute and a half in and out. It was longer. I coached with the music director. I sang through almost every piece, and she said, you know, she said there's no questions. There's no parts of this role that vocally are a problem. It fit me like a glove. And that's exactly what that's sort of like a vetting session, because if Hal thinks you're right for it and you go and meet with the music director and they say, you know what, he doesn't have an A-flat, doesn't have a pianissimo A-flat, it's always going to be a problem, don't hire him, you know.
Wow.
So anyway, I went in and I did the audition, and he said, just sit tight. You're going to do this part. Just sit tight. He said, you know what? I need people, and you're the next in line. And so, anyway, I ended up doing it in Toronto, and at one point I was doing both, flying up to Toronto and doing the Phantom, and then leaving, and then going back into Showboat as Ravenel in Chicago. I had about a year that I did both. It was an incredible time. Then when I was done with Phantom and Showboat, I felt like I had just needed a break. I had been in the fast lane. I had been working 8 shows a week on Broadway and on American tours, on Canadian tours as well. It's exhausting. And you'll see, when you see shows come through Miller Auditorium, you'll see it's a young person's business. And while I was still very young, I felt like I just want to just dig my hands in my garden and have friends over and have a life for a little bit. So I ended up having my manager. I said to him, I really would like to do concerts. You know, this has been a really hard 10 years here. And so he got me an audition for a concert producer, and he hired me for one concert with Spokane Symphony, which is a Rodgers and Hammerstein program, which is kind of what my voice lends itself to, that rep, you know, Cole Porter, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Lerner and Lowe. It's kind of, you know, everyone has a certain little sweet spot that their voice, it feels like, oh, I can do that, you know. So did that, and he got good feedback on me, and he called me and said, if you want to do this, I can book you. He came over and actually auditioned me. And so I said, book me. And then I instantly got, you know, 20 concerts in the first year. And then I've sustained, I'm going on 13 years maybe of doing probably 40 to 50 concerts per year and traveling about 125 days. And I've done, you know, I've been able to sing with most of the great orchestras in Pops venues. I've done Cleveland Orchestra, Chicago Symphony with Marvin Hamlisch, San Francisco Symphony numerous times, and I've been to sung at Wolf Trap, Kennedy Center numerous times, Utah, San Diego, and we have been so lucky to share. You know, we've sort of been ambassadors for the classic Broadway music, which has become really respected as an art form. The music of Lerner and Lowe and George Gershwin, Jerome Kern, Irving Berlin, Cole Porter, Bernstein. There's a catalog of music that is a part of the Great American Songbook, but also has been integral to the concert hall. And I've been able to do a lot of this music all over the world. We've been to the Czech Republic. We've been to Beijing. I did a concert with Long Long in Beijing. He played Rhapsody in Blue, and we all sang Gershwin and sang a piece with him. And Korea and all a couple different places in China and South America and Israel Philharmonic I've done 5 times. And all under the auspices of this one producer, and I've sort of stuck with it and had a wonderful career. Feel very lucky.
Well, now that you've told me your journey, I have a few follow-up questions or observations. One of them being that I think people may have the misconception that being a singer who can deliver a great show tune is easier than it sounds because of the singing shows that we have on offer to watch on television, where people just get up and belt something out. And you've just described almost an apprenticeship, learning from legendary showbiz figures, working every single day, show after show after show after show, to build that kind of professionalism that I'm really in awe of the work you put in.
Oh, that's kind of you to say. I feel really lucky that I've had people guiding me. Brent Wagner at the University of Michigan is a wonderful ambassador to this genre of music I'm describing. And my voice teacher, Leslie Gwynn at Michigan, was terrific. My voice teacher in New York City, Norma Newton, was terrific. And having the opportunity to just have a small chapter of my life associated with legendary people from past generations, I do feel like there's a torch that needs to be carried. And my collaboration with Marvin Hamlisch was incredible to watch him. He's the real bridge between Gershwin and Andrew Lloyd Webber. That's the guy who was born in the early 40s, and his career spanned all the great songwriters of the Great American Songbook into pop writers of today. And his legacy will be his ability to share that music with audiences all over the globe. He was very vocal about that. Bring your kids to the theater. Bring your kids to the orchestra hall. Bring them in for an evening of Cole Porter. Maybe they might come back to hear Shostakovich. Hmm. You know, so I learned quite a bit from him on that. And
back to the kids who show up on TV, we see them in their moment and then we never hear from them again because they don't have that foundation and that sort of serious ethic, perhaps.
Well, it's hard because they get thrown into such a big stage so soon, so fast, and some of them survive and most of them don't. You're right. There's a ladder that you need to climb, and not just for your craft of singing, but just for the ability to handle the attention. My career as a concert singer, the Doug LeBrec that sang in 1998 in the Spokane Symphony and the Doug LeBrec who sings now are fundamentally different. And mostly because of my experience, speaking to an audience and being able to, I'm usually thrust to the host position, and it's something that you refine and craft, and that's what you can't really teach by just telling someone or scripting it. You just have to get out there and do it and crash and burn and crash and burn and figure out what works. And it's a bit of a separate craft that needs to be honed. And I've worked with some singers who have been on singing shows, and that's the one thing that's been missing is saying, my God, when you open your mouth, it's just staggeringly good to sing a song. Now we got to find a way to put a little polish on when you're speaking to the audience and introducing this particular piece. And you can talk about the original artist, you can talk about the songwriter, you can talk about the period in which it was written, you could talk musically what meter it's in, whatever you want to do, but we have to find something, you know. And then you get sort of crickets and a blank stare. It's like, I don't know how to do that. They're used to having someone else do that for them.
Well, it's kind of critical because you're in front, it's a 3,000 seat auditorium or bigger, and there are people sitting who can't see you up close. You need to project this feeling of I'm singing for you,
mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of craft that I think all of that stage work.
Well, the audience here, if the people come to Miller Auditorium on this Saturday, the Andrew Lloyd Webber and Friends concert, the singers that I'm sharing the stage with, Debbie Gravett and Christiane Knoll, are both highly experienced, celebrated singers who have done concerts all over the world. And both of them they're a lot different from one another, which is terrific. Debbie's more of a brassy belter. And the audience will fall in love with her. She's really at ease speaking to people. Christiane was almost like a lyric coloratura, did a lot of crossover. She sang with Placido Domingo and the National Opera. I forgot what it was, but she's a celebrated concert singer and a Broadway singer. She can belt. She could use a belt like Barbra Streisand if she needs to, and then she could sing off the staff and do Glitter and Be Gay as good as anyone. So they're vastly different, but I think they both have a winning way with speaking to the audience that I think people will see.
Great. Let's look at the music then.
Okay.
Well, why don't we plunge right into the headline of Andrew Lloyd Webber. You're doing...
Well, the music of Phantom of the Opera, the music of Cats, music of Jesus Christ Superstar, music from Evita, and music from Aspects of Love. There'll be songs featured from all those shows. And
well, maybe I should ask, have you met Andrew Lloyd Webber?
I have once, yes.
Tell
Am
me
I
your...
his pal? No. He came to the opening night of a show I did, and actually, it was the opening night of Joseph that Donny Osmond did. That it was in Toronto, and I was invited to the private party, and I met him, and I was introduced as the guy. This is the guy who plays Raoul in the Toronto Company, and shake your hand, pleasure to meet you, sort of thing. It's no secret, not to talk out of school, he's a very odd duck, but he's got a gift for melody, and he's doing something right. He's an easy target to judge people in classical music circles. Many people will say, oh God, so sick of that. What is that? Da 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 da. Oh my God. But he's bringing people to the theater with his music. And he's doing something right. He does write memorable melodies. And
yeah.
People will say, it's derivative. And well, if it's so easy to do, why aren't there other people doing it to this level? Why do people see sit through Cats, which is like, what is it about? Who knows? I mean, it's just like a bunch of cats in a junkyard trying to get to the heavy side layer. They're trying to tell some sort of story, but millions and millions and millions of people bought that. This one song, Memory. It's like, oh my God, Memory from Cats. Which is Ravel's Bolero, did you know? Da 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 da. Memory all alone in the moonlight. Da 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 da. It's a different meter, but it's very derivative of that.
Oh wow.
Whoever thought of that, right?
Well, just call it unconscious plagiarism.
Well,
I think it got popular. I think it's turning around, actually. It would get kind of popular to say, oh, Andrew Lloyd Webber is derivative of something. And I think now, with time has shown, yes, like, just as you said, he has a genius for this and will go down as one of the great authors of music theater.
Well, I mean, anything that's hyper successful becomes someone's the overdog and they're easy to judge. I mean, I'm sure Puccini in his day was such a populist that people would say, ugh, it's so simple and it's too easy, it's too lyrical. And then, fast forward 50 years and then the great Puccini wrote all these wonderful arias and these wonderful operas.
Right.
I think
do anything wrong. Yeah.
Do you think that's an accurate statement?
I think that's entirely possible. I don't know, but it seems like critics are always looking for something to criticize. So,
right.
The fact that I was born at a time when the soundtrack to Jesus Christ Superstar was on our turntables at home.
Oh, no, you're dating yourself, Kara.
I will always have a soft spot for Andrew Lloyd Webber. And I see that the Superstar medley that's on the program on Saturday night is just the orchestra, no singers, so it's almost a little showcase there.
The KSO needs a lot of showcase. They're fantastic. They'll be playing a couple pieces, and I think Raymond inserted a classic Broadway Bernstein piece. They're going to play this Perez arrangement of West Side Story, which I don't think Leonard Bernstein and Andrew Lloyd Webber would be considered friends.
Maybe not.
But maybe, who knows? But it's just extraordinary to hear an orchestra like Kalamazoo Symphony play Bernstein music. It'll just be incredible.
Well, you're very kind. I'm sure they'll appreciate it.
No, they're really good.
Yeah. Have you ever been, your schedule is crazy. Have you ever been sidelined by illness that forced you to stop and slow down?
I prided myself in never missing a performance when I was doing Broadway stuff, which was just an ethic that I was taught. And the show must go on mentality was a part of me. And that's a reputation that serves you, really serves you, because, you know, if you're in a show long term, it is a union job. It can become very much like punching a clock, and people will count their personal days and take their sick days and play the system. If the downbeat of the overture plays and you're in the theater, you get paid. So when I was in Showboat, there were people who would leave after the first act and people who would use every sick day. I don't want to stand in judgment of that, but I tried not to be that person. And I got through my whole career without missing. And I was going to a matinee of Showboat in the second year, and I was wearing flip-flops, and I was late running up the escalator on 125th Street to get the subway, and I just sliced my foot on the escalator. And so I was out for 12 days, which is a lot of performances, and I couldn't even put any weight on it. So I missed. And then in the concert world, I've never had to cancel, except one time 2 years ago, I was with Indianapolis Symphony, and we stayed up, did the rehearsal. It was called From Vienna to Broadway. It was a lot of classic operetta pieces and then some stuff from Kismet and stuff that a little bit more, using a little bit more of your voice than jazzy Broadway stuff. So, I stayed up with the tenor, ate something at like 11:30, and then I woke up in the middle of the night and I was hospitalized by 11 in the morning. Had an IV. And they came.
The show could not go on.
I couldn't do anything. Yeah. And they asked me, it was about at noon. I was in the emergency room with a dripping IV. I didn't know what was wrong. I mean, I just assumed it was food poisoning. I had no idea. Yeah. And I said, I've never missed. I said, I'm assuming once the downbeat of that overture hits, I will be fine. And the doctor said to the woman running the Indianapolis Symphony, he said, the human being who is laying in this bed right now will not be performing at 8 o'clock. He will not be able to walk at 8 o'clock. This guy is way too sick. So they flew someone in, and I had to cancel the whole weekend. So, but generally, I've been knock on for Micah here. I've been pretty healthy person, and I try my best to stay disciplined on the week of a performance. You know, all bets are off when I'm on vacation and between shows. But, you know, I still love what I do, and I still try to respect it enough. And the older you get, the more recovery time you need and the more careful you have to be. You can't be out drinking a bottle of wine on Friday and then trying to do a concert on Saturday. It just doesn't work that way. Maybe when you're 21, it could have, but so I have a certain bit of discipline that I try to follow.
Well, I really feel like I'm getting a real behind the scenes look at your profession, what you do, what you go through as a professional musician to stay on top of your game. That's great.
Well, there are certain concerts you do where I thought, oh, I could just, who cares? I could do, I don't even want to name a specific show, but I just like I could do whatever I want and sing Oh, What a Beautiful Morning. Who cares? Goes up to an E natural and says what I do, you know. But every time you have that attitude, something jumps up and bites you, you know. It's like I didn't rehearse enough, and then you get in the middle of the second act, you're like, oh my God, I forgot I was singing that. What is this? How does this go?
Wow. So. Well, I'm sure it just takes one moment of terror like that to put you back on track with practicing. And are there any more highlights of the show on Saturday we should look at?
Well, I want to mention a couple of the other shows that are being featured.
Okay.
Because the concert's called Andrew Lloyd Webber and Friends. It's not necessarily his personal friends, but it's prolific songwriters and composers who are writing in the same period, sometimes in the same style. And the show will feature some of the most popular musicals of our time. Music from Wicked, which I know people here in Kalamazoo love. They love them some Wicked. Hairspray. Music from Evita, Cats, Phantom of the Opera, Superstar, we said. Beauty and the Beast.
Oh,
Chorus
really?
Line. There'll be music from the Jekyll and Hyde. Jekyll and Hyde, not the Jekyll and Hyde. Music from the Jekyll and Hyde. Music from Jekyll and Hyde. And probably a number of other things I'm not remembering. But, you know, instead of having to get in your car and drive to Detroit and take Delta and end up at LaGuardia and take a cab and go to Broadway, we're bringing it right here to you. And the girls I'm singing with, wow. Tony Award winner, Debbie Gravett. She's been in Jerome Robbins Broadway. She was in Chicago. She was in Les Mis and a number of other shows. And Christiane Knoll has been in, originated the role of Emma in Broadway's Jekyll and Hyde and was hand-selected by the Rodgers and Hammerstein organization to be the voice of Anna in the animated version of The King and I. She toured in Miss Saigon. She's been on Broadway. I don't even know the number of shows, but she was nominated for a Tony Award 2 years ago for Mother in Ragtime. The role is called Mother. She was a Drama Desk nominee for Chaplin last year. And both of them are two of the most prolific concert singers. And we have traveled many, many hours across the globe together. So it's always fun to be on stage with them and watch them change their gowns.
What gives you satisfaction knowing after a concert? You've done hundreds and hundreds of concerts. You've performed them all very well. I'm sure you get raves every time. Personally.
I try. I don't know about every time, but.
Well, personally, what makes you say to yourself, now that was good?
Interesting question. You know what? What comes to my mind is, it feels like you study, you hone your craft, and you try really hard, and you take it seriously. And there are moments you have that it feels effortful. You're just like, oh, just trying to do this. I'm trying to do this. It happens some of the time. And then there are moments when you feel like, oh, I'm sort of in my game, and that feels good. And then there are these moments you have when you connect in a way, spiritually, emotionally, musically, and you take a breath, you think a thought, you sing the song, you finish the song, and you take a breath, and you don't really know what happened. It just, something just happened. I don't know how to access that every time. And I don't know if anyone knows the secret of accessing that every time. But the craft of concert singing and really the craft of theater acting is to deliver that as if you're experiencing it for the first time, to rhapsodically express how much you love someone for the first time. How do you do that? Do you feel it every time? Absolutely not. You do not feel it every time. But when those things connect, that's when I feel like, whoa, how did that happen? What is the key that unfolds that? And I don't know what it is. But it's a brilliant feeling when it happens. Like, oh my God, those people don't even know how good that was. Or how good I thought that was. Maybe it wasn't as good. I don't know. But it felt like, you know, oh my gosh, that was good.
Doug LeBrecq, it has been so wonderful having you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.